What's going on, Suns fans? Justin here, and with me, as always, is my podcasting partner, Paul.
Heyo, Kermit the Frog here.
All right, and we are coming at you with this week's edition of Bright Side of the Suns for the fans by the fans podcast. As always, you can get me on Twitter at So Says Jay, and Paul is
at Dervish of Whirl.
All right, at Dervish of Whirl. We have a special guest this week, Adam Spinella, who is from Culver City. I just threw city in my notes. Culver, Indiana. He's a basketball coach out there. He's a contributor to coaching websites like Fast Model Sports, Men's Basketball Hoop Scoop, and the Box and One. And you can catch him on Twitter at Spinella. That's S-P-I-N-E-L-L-A 14. He also contributes to bballbreakdown.com. And that is one of the many reasons he's here with us tonight, and that's because he recently published an article regarding the current status of the Phoenix Suns rebuild. So he's with us to chat about that, his thoughts on it, and where things might be going in the future. Adam, thank you very much for joining us.
Now, Justin, Paul, thank you guys so much for having me, and I'm excited to talk some Suns tonight.
All righty, as we are, as always. So we'll jump right into it. I thought your article, first of all, was very well written, very well done, and maybe that's just because I share a lot of the same thoughts that you do. Some thoughts which might not be all that popular in Phoenix.
Very true.
But I feel you, bro. I feel you. And the first thing I wanted to chat about was one of the things you discuss in there, and for all the folks listening, we will have the link on the page for this podcast, so you can go ahead and check that article out. Please do. I won't read the whole URL because that'll just kind of be mind-numbing, and frankly, I'll probably get it wrong. But at any rate, one of the things you mentioned in there about Coach Earl Watson, who I'm on the record saying I love. I wish the dude would give me a hug. I really, really think he's the right coach for this team.
I think he gives good hugs.
Someday maybe I'll find out. Maybe.
He just seems like the kind of guy who would give good hugs.
He does.
Hugs when it's really unnecessary, too.
Okay, Paul. Don't make it weird, okay?
I make it weird all the time.
Always. So, at any rate, you mentioned in your article that Earl Watson is a coach that has a propensity for player development. Now, one of the things that's been kind of the rage out here in Phoenix is play the young guys. Why isn't Earl Watson playing the young guys? So my question to you would be, where exactly does that comment come from? Where exactly in Earl Watson's background do you see him having this history of, you know, helping to develop players? And what benefit do you think that's going to bring to the Suns, obviously, moving forward?
Sure. I think it comes from two places, really. One is just his background as a player. He was really just a solid fundamentals-based player that scrapped and clawed his way to stay in the league for over a decade on maybe some 10-day contracts and on teams he, skill-wise, probably didn't have any business being in this league. But he has a really strong understanding of how to play the game. And as a teacher for young players, that's an invaluable asset to have somebody around you that really knows how to teach the game, see the game through just a great lens. And I think a lot of my estimation of him being a good player development coach just comes off of how he was as a player. The second thing is, as a coach myself, wanting to sympathize with someone who is a little bit more conservative and protective of his young players and really cares about bringing guys along, not just throwing them to the fire. You know, he works with them on their weaknesses and puts them early in their career in situations not only where they can succeed, but in situations that they'll face a lot as a pro, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense to throw, I don't know, Devin Booker out there a lot as a small forward in a lot of different lineups just because it helps the Suns now mesh with their current group. If maybe 3, 4, 5 years from now, when he's at his full potential, he's never going to see a lot of minutes as a small forward.
That makes sense. What about with regards to like the rookie players? I know he's got Marquise starting, but for a good chunk of the year, we were watching Dragan Bender, who is like the number 4 pick, not even touching the court. I mean, I understand bringing the players along slowly, but not even giving them minutes on the court kind of seems antithetical to that to that process.
Yeah, you know, I think again with that conservative and protective side, are you throwing a guy out there before he's ready? What good are you really doing for him? Morale is such a tricky thing to master in the NBA and in any sport, really. You know, how do you keep guys who are young and learning the game really positive about what they're doing and the growing pains that they have to go through? And if you put a guy out there before he's really truly ready, that's not necessarily going to give him the boost of morale that he needs. I mean, Bender was the fourth overall pick, and if he's getting, you know, tossed around and not looking great early on in his career, is that going to start to get to his head? He's a young guy, and I tend to sympathize with coaches who kind of play that mental game and are really protective of their guys.
Right. I mean, and I completely get that. I think what frustrates a lot of Suns fans is particularly with regards to Bender, and he's obviously been getting more time recently. Granted, mm-hmm. Lobat might have been due to some injuries and whatnot on the team, but he showed every time he was in, he was showing flashes, and we watch him get a game where he's showing flashes, showing positives, and then the next game he doesn't even play at all, and we're like, wait, what happened there? To us as fans watching the game, you're like, he earned more time, and then he's not mm-hmm. getting it, and we're almost seeing the opposite of what you're talking about, morale. It's like, if I was in Bender's situation, being like, hey, I did positive, I did good, I was on the court, I made plays, and then, hey, I didn't get to play the next game, then to me, that would kind of be the opposite of that a little bit.
Yeah, and to play devil's advocate, I mean, I think that Watson's really concerned about putting him in the situation to succeed. So if he plays one game against an opponent where, okay, his stretch shooting big man type of role really is effective, but he might be a defensive liability the next game because they play two bigs and they're going to muscle him around. You know, Earl's really trying to put him in a situation where he can succeed and not get exposed a little bit. And it's more about the opponents and the daily grind of who they're playing than it is about, okay, he played well on Wednesday, now we have to play him on Friday regardless of what the matchup dictates.
Right. And I think that's a really good point that you brought up. And I will say that Paul mentioned that many Suns fans think that, you know, he should be playing more. I am vocally not one of those Suns fans. I'm perfectly fine with Dragan Bender sitting. I frankly would be okay if Chris was sitting too. Obviously, he's capable of playing, but I think there's something to be said about bringing players along slowly, especially guys that young, especially a guy like Dragan Bender who mm-hmm. is obviously not where he's going to be physically in the future just yet. I liken it a lot to which we don't see anymore either, but in the NFL, exactly. Quarterbacks get drafted high and they don't play for 2 years. Now suddenly you draft a quarterback, you're expecting him to take over a franchise. Right. And it really doesn't, I don't think, create the best situation for, you know, some young kids. And those guys are even older than the kids that we're talking about right now.
Right.
But the point that I think is really is very important that you brought up is the physicality. You know, you talked about Dragan Bender getting pushed around out there. He is a skinny guy, and Chris is a skinny guy too, but I think we can all agree has more athleticism, natural athleticism than Bender does. And nasty streak for sure. I love it. but you know, do you see there being, you know, a correlation, a connection between, you know, the physicality of it all and making sure that these guys have themselves maybe not fully developed, but more physically prepared to play and the ability for them to ensure that they're mentally ready to play?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think physical preparedness is a huge issue in the NBA for these young guys. You know, Bender has a little bit of a non-traditional path, so to speak, having played in, mm-hmm. in Europe and gotten some pro ball time in Israel but thinking about guys who have gone through maybe high school and then play 1 or 2 years in college, they're going from playing 25 games a year to maybe 35 or 40 the next, and now they're expected to play 82 and double that. They're still going through growth spurts in their own bodies. I mean, these kids are 18 and 19 years old, and I think some perspective is needed a lot of the times because we look at them as professionals now and guys that are, you know, doing this for a living, and excuses are out the window. They're still growing. I mean, from a purely physiological standpoint, men tend to add muscle and gain weight and size in kind of 4 or 5 year increments from like 14 or 15, and then 19 or 20, and then 24 and 25.
Oh, I remember those increments.
I'm still
trying to work those off.
I think I skipped all of those because I've got the same size since I was like 13, except I lost weight. But at any rate, to your point, Devin Booker grew an inch over the offseason this year.
Yeah.
Right. Anthony Davis is still growing.
That's freaking scary.
Yeah. And I mean, we're discounting that because we think of these guys, okay, they're professionals now. They're just going to continue on this upward trajectory. And we're not even taking into account that some of these guys are still waiting for one or two more growth spurts just from a physical perspective. I mean, I don't know. I'm 24. I didn't put on like any weight until I was maybe 20 or 21. And even now I'm still like this skinny schlump. Like I got nothing on me. But at the same time, like I can relate to that a little bit for being out there when you're 19 or 20 years old and you're going against these grown men in their late 20s, early 30s, who are huge physical specimens. It's a completely different type of game for them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that completely makes sense. I think for Suns fans, I think we got spoiled by Booker last year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sorry about that. KC, quiet.
Excuse the dog, folks.
we got spoiled by Booker last year, where he just kind of stepped into it and was playing to an extent like a much older player than he actually was. So right. We expect that of these other high drafted rookies because they were high drafted higher.
Right. And I'll go out on a limb and say this, and tell me if you disagree, Adam, but somebody that's like Booker playing the two versus somebody like Bender or Chris playing the 4-3, maybe sometimes 5 sometimes.
Yeah.
They're going to deal with a lot less physical abuse, for lack of a better way of putting it, than Booker would.
No doubt. You know, I think that, I mean, and we're not even taking into account all the other things about transitioning into the NBA too, right? The travel schedule, the insane focus on scouting and knowing every little minute detail of who you're playing, and the mental aspect of that. There's no classes. There's nothing else in your life, really. This is it. I mean, there's a lot of pressures that are on these guys outside of the court that, you know, if you're not mentally ready to handle that, then yeah, the physical aspect is going to be that much harder for you to handle on the court.
Yeah. That makes sense, and I think that's something that a lot of fans just kind of don't think about.
Right.
Like you.
Yeah.
Not to be mean, Paul.
Not to be mean. I don't know. I followed Kendall Marshall on Twitter for a while and watched him go through it.
What? Kendall Marshall? What is it?
He had a good Twitter follow for a while.
Oh, Adam, did you follow Kendall Marshall on Twitter?
No, I did not. No.
You and everybody else, including probably his parents.
But I'm a Duke guy, so that's sacrilegious.
For me. That's fair enough. That's yeah. Oh, I didn't realize that.
No, we didn't. Yeah, I don't know. We may have to. Yep.
Oh,
not an alum. Just
why
a fan.
So? Why so? Why, what do you have against Duke, Paul?
I don't know.
Okay. So you just okay. Never mind. We'll move on from that. Okay. So, one other thing that you, what?
I said dead air.
Oh, one other thing that you mentioned in your article is that Booker, speaking of the aforementioned Devin Booker, is currently a little bit more of a one-dimensional shooting guard than the franchise really needs, deserves. What do you think needs to be done to change that? And I think, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall correctly, you were kind of talking about how, you know, he's not getting involved in as much of the attacking, things like that, perhaps. Where exactly do you see him being this one-dimensional player? What needs to be done offensively,
defensively,
with personnel, whatever the case might be, to kind of improve that one-dimensionality?
Yeah, I think with Booker right now, he's being used a lot in really two types of ways. One is, okay, we're going to put him in a ball screen and let him create out of that and see, you know, what he can do and score there. And the second area is we're just going to spot him up on kind of the wing, and hopefully Bledsoe or Knight or someone else can drive and kick to him out there.
Probably not Knight.
Yeah, probably not Knight.
But, sorry, I have to express my dislike for Brandon Knight as often as possible. But go on, I apologize.
We were all thinking it.
Exactly, yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah.
I think with great shooters on the wing, especially when you play with a point guard as athletic as Bledsoe is, there's this, I like to call it gravity, that these shooters have, where they suck defenders towards them when they're around the three-point line, because they're such consistent and strong shooters that defenses are always trying to account for them. And I'd love to see the Suns run Booker off more screens, more, you know, staggered type screens or like, flare more like, screens.
More like Ray Allen, Richard.
Yeah, like Klay Thompson almost a little bit. And having that gravity that he, you know, would really affect the defense with opens up the lane a little bit more for guys like Bledsoe or Ulis, or allows screeners who are screening for him to slip to the rim and get those easy baskets. Mid-range is like the death of me. I've fully bought into that analytics type of, you know, of craze that's going on in basketball right now. And seeing how many ball screens that Booker comes off and just one dribble pulls up from around like 18 feet. Yeah, he's pretty good at those, but that's not maximum usage to me, because it's not just about one guy. What a threat Booker can be without even touching the ball can help Phoenix's offense grow so, so much.
And I think a lot of Suns fans are kind of a similar mold in that they remember what Booker was drafted at. He was drafted as that three-point, you know, dead-eye threat in the mold of a Klay Thompson. And it seems more he's kind of almost morphed into more of a playing a role, not to this level, but of a game similar to like a Kobe Bryant of like dribble, like off the dribble, kind of one-on-one, taking contested shots at low percentage, which isn't really what is the bread and butter of his game. And that's, I think, one of the things that has concerned myself, and I think a lot of the other Suns fans that I've talked to and read and seen on the message boards with regards to Watson's offense, mm-hmm. in that he's not, to us, it doesn't seem like he's maximizing the strengths of the players that he has.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong with Booker. Like, he can score out of a ball screen. He's pretty good with the ball in his hands. He's aggressive. He had 14 free throw attempts tonight against the Cavs. I mean, that's huge. Yeah, that's unbelievable for a guy his age. But there's also the usage of, you know, what does he do when he doesn't have the ball in his hands? And I think being used as a decoy a little bit more and a constant cutter and a guy who's not just standing still and spotting up is only going to help the Suns offense just get a little bit more efficient.
Yeah, and I think you bring up an interesting word right there, efficiency, you didn't say efficiency, but efficient, mm-hmm. in terms of the Suns offense, because as we all know, the Suns average the least number of assists per game. Least or second least?
I think the least. It's down there.
It's not pleasant. Basically, like what Steve Nash used to do day in and day out, the Suns do as a team per game.
Well, there was that
obviously exaggeration.
There was that graphic I sent you in text the other day where it showed the Suns were. It was showing assists to offensive rating, and the Suns were like way down in the bottom with like low assists, low offensive rating, and they're like,
yeah, their assist to turnover ratio is not very good.
No,
yeah,
that's a very nice way of putting it.
It's Knight's fault.
We appreciate that. It's totally Knight's fault. It's all right. But I guess what I'm getting at is obviously there's a lack of efficiency in the Suns' offense right now. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's actually a problem with the type of offense that Earl Watson is having them run, or is it more of a, hey, he's getting young players involved and used to a system that perhaps they haven't run before, and he is bringing them along slowly, doing the whole nurturing Earl Watson, hugging and counting high fives type of thing that he likes to do.
Yeah, it's a mesh of both, in my opinion. And I know I mentioned this in the article, and I don't want to spoil it too much for those out there who might, you know, give a click on that and give it a read. But
oh, we'll get you tens of clicks.
All right, I love tens. Suns don't have a post up threat on their team.
Mm-hmm.
And when you don't have somebody that you can post up on the block and throw the ball to and either get, you know, a shot from a high percentage area that's maybe 5 or 10 feet away from the basket, or command a double team and kick out to an open shooter, efficient shots are harder to come by. And the Suns, you know, it seems like Watson knows that he doesn't have that post up threat and just says, ah, screw it. We're going to play perimeter-based basketball. And defenses just have an easier time of forcing those less efficient mid-range shots as a result. I don't think that there's anything that structurally wrong with the Suns' offense, but they don't have anywhere to go to get easy buckets.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Watson or the young players on his team are at a point where they can kind of outsmart pretty good defensive teams and get consistent buckets game in and game out from areas where the defense might not be keyed in on that exact possession.
Right now. And so next question then would be,
yep,
do the Suns have a player on this team now, obviously in their youth, that could become that post presence, that post threat, or are they going to have to go elsewhere, whether it be draft or free agency? I'm assuming most likely, well, who knows?
Well,
but excuse me, Paul. or do they need to go elsewhere to get that threat?
I may sound crazy when I say this right now.
Oh, I'm excited.
All right. I think the best thing to be able to do for a post-up threat on this roster as it currently exists is to warrant bullying smaller guards or wings.
Think
about that for a second.
I like me some TJ Warren. I gotta say, I mean, that guy knows how to find the hoop.
Yeah, he's not a great outside shooter. And the Suns are in a position now where they're kind of building this future around guys like Chris and Bender, who might be able to someday, not this year, not right away, but someday, play the four and the five. And if you can spread the floor around a wing who can kind of bully post the smaller defender, that could be a real option for them. Now, granted, it's not going to get them more than 4 or 6 points a game, but when you need that easy bucket, that's an option that's there.
And it's also that gravity thing you were talking about. If you can get a guy who can have decent efficiency and will draw defenders in, it opens up those outside shooters. And I think I'm kind of on the same page as you, just from the standpoint of looking at the team as it's currently constructed. In an ideal scenario, you would have, like, say, like a Bender, a Chris, and a Booker out on the perimeter ready to shoot from various angles. You can have Bledsoe driving and kicking, and then you also have TJ in that mid-range who,
scores baskets.
Yeah, Tony Bucket. Called Tony Buckets for a reason, but I feel like there's an inefficiency in the league that everybody's. I know you said you've completely bought in on the threes and layups. Mm-hmm. There's going to be that swing back to that guy who is just amazing in that mid-range.
Right.
Because nobody guards that anymore. Yep. Nobody, like, everybody designs their offense about that's the shot you want to give up. That's why LaMarcus Aldridge is as good as he is, because that's his shot. And if we have a guy like that who does that, one that from the elbow, and like you said, also can post up and draw that gravity, it opens it up for those shooters on the outside. So that would be my ideal setup, and hopefully down the road we can have something like that.
Yeah, I think the blueprint a little bit more for the Suns is to go and stay away from this post-up ideal and to play that spread out almost of five guys around the perimeter system, open
like
up driving lanes. Yeah, a little bit more like the Warriors. You know, I think the best example I could give right now is the Dallas Mavericks when they're playing Dirk at the five.
Okay.
And they just have a lot of shooters around him and let guards like Darren Williams or J.J. Barea just kind of run wild in the paint. And it opens up a lot of spacing because there's no clear defender who's there to protect the rim.
So with that, it sounds like you would – if you were Ryan McDonough and you were reconstructing this team, you'd probably move away from the Tyson Chandlers and the Alex Lenz and those guys who kind of clog the middle just because they don't have that outside game.
It's a delicate balance to find between offense and defense, right? We're talking about the offensive side of things, and Bender and Chris are far too inexperienced to be the anchor of the defense. You know, offense is predicated around bringing those rim protectors away from the rim and opening up ways to get those easy buckets. Whereas defense is all about having a rim protector that you can create a defensive scheme around so that you keep him there to defend against those high efficiency type of shots. And Chandler and Len are the two best hopes on the defensive end for this court, and probably the two guys that I'd say, screw it, let's ditch him, on the offensive end. So it's such a delicate balance right now. I don't dislike Len. I think he's got a lot of upside left in him, and
going to get paid.
You know, I know it's been a point of contention, kind of what do you do with Len this summer if he gets kind of like a $15 million a year deal elsewhere? Do you match it? I think you do. You're welcome.
Adam, I think I'm gonna get rid of Paul, and maybe you and I just do this every week.
All right.
Deal.
Well, hey, I was saying he's gonna get $17 million on the free agent market.
Dude, you went through in like 4 minutes a couple weeks ago. You went through like 8 different numbers and confused yourself.
This is true.
I mean, I don't know.
Too many beers that night.
Yeah, I don't know what the number is where McDonough kind of walks away and says, you know what, that's a little bit too much for a guy who's not necessarily the blueprint for our front court for the future, but he has a lot of things that he can still offer this team. And I look at just his numbers from last year, and they were so abysmal. And I think a lot of people –
Well, he was playing out of position for a lot of
it. He was. That's right. And people don't realize that. Those who look at those numbers and kind of see what it was, they don't understand exactly what went into that. And he's looked more comfortable this year in his role, and there's more upside to be had there. I don't think it's time to bail on him. And guess what? Even if you re-sign Len and extend him a little bit for 3-4 years, and you draft a young guy who's a center in this upcoming class, or you find someone else to go there for competition, he's still going to have value on the trade market because he is young. And in 3 or 4 years, $15 million a year for a 25, 26 minutes a game of a center is not a bad deal.
Right. And I think that the NBA is, to a certain extent, maybe to a large extent, you know, straight away from that dominant center type of league. You know, there's no Shaqs running around out there anymore. But at the same time,
there is a Joel Embiid.
Well, he doesn't play like Shaq.
No, he doesn't play like Shaq, but there's a lot of great centers.
But at the same time, there's still a value in having somebody who is a big man that can anchor that. I mean, look at Tyson Chandler, anchor that defensive side and get rebounds for you. You know what? If Tyson Chandler doesn't need to score a damn point any night, but he'll probably grab like 27 rebounds, so it's going to be great.
And Suns are 3-3 in their last six games, and in all six, Chandler's had more than 15 rebounds.
Oh, Chandler's been lights out on the court. It's crazy the difference from last year to this year. I know last year there were a lot of injuries and whatnot, but just watching, listening and watching the fans and whatnot, how they've shifted on him from looking at that as, like, oh, that was a wasted signing to, like dude, he is killing it right now, and we might be able to get a crap ton in return if we trade him.
Pretty sure three first-round draft picks, right?
Well, and Watson's not even going on record and saying he doesn't want to trade him.
Right.
I understand. Well, that doesn't mean McDonough won't.
But here's an interesting thing is – Chandler said he doesn't want to be traded, at least last offseason.
I kind of don't want him to be traded anymore.
and that's kind of, you know, an interesting point in that how much value does a guy like Chandler and a guy like PJ Tucker have to the team still here as opposed to what they can bring in a trade? Because, you know, Tyson's obviously been playing phenomenal. I'm assuming that Len is taking some notes and picking up some pointers from the guy. And
I've liked Len's game too.
Right. And Earl Watson earlier this week discussed the fact that Devin Booker's resurgence, if you will, he's, you know, played much better over the past couple of weeks than he had throughout the rest of the previous part of the season, came around the same time that he started playing against PJ Tucker regularly in practice. So, you know, I almost wonder if it makes it that much harder to trade these guys we would expect them to trade because they bring more value perhaps long term than they would. Well, I guess it depends. Actually, if you get a draft pick, but they bring maybe a higher amount of value long term than they would if they get traded. And maybe I'm crazy.
It's a less tangible kind of value, I think you could say. Like, whereas trading them for a draft pick, you get.
We can only play so many first round draft picks on this team,
right? But I mean, trading for a draft pick, you're going to get an asset. But these guys bring that like mental. They help them with the mental side of the game,
right,
which is, you know, very valuable. That I think the stat heads kind of ignore a little bit,
right?
They ignore the human side of the game,
right? So, I feel like we can start wrapping up here. This has been a fantastic conversation, Adam. Like I said, I'm going to fire Paul, and I, but I in the very
I'll least, be the guest.
I at least have one more question. Paul might have more, but okay. So one stat that you had put in your article, and again, not to spoil too much, but is the fact that the Suns, at least at the time that you had written this, forced the most turnovers per game. I had no idea. I never would have imagined that was the case. So then my question is, if they force the most turnovers per game, why are they giving up so many goddamn points? Excuse my language.
It's a good question, and I think from my perspective and from what I've seen from watching Phoenix play this year and their style defensively, it's that they're gambling a lot. Mm-hmm. And when you gamble, sometimes you win. You create those steals, you get those transition points, and you fuel easy opportunities to score on offense, which if you've watched their half-court offenses here, they need that. But when you gamble and lose, you give up open shots. And with a young team, you create these disadvantaged situations when you gamble and lose. And the young players struggle in not just the rotations that are needed, but understanding the unique threats that are on the floor. So, for example, one guy might realize that he's closing out to the corner when the ball gets skipped there, and it's Andre Iguodala, and the next pass away is Steph Curry. You know, the textbook rotation might say, yeah, I've got to go cover Iguodala because the ball's headed to him. But really, what's the biggest threat?
Curry.
Right. So
I got it right.
It's kind of the game within a game, so to speak.
Yeah.
and it's a young team that's really still figuring that out. It takes patience, it takes time, and it takes really just consistent effort from those guys day in and day out to go through the bumps and grinds of an NBA season or two and learn that.
Absolutely.
But I don't think Watson's in the wrong for trying to create those turnovers and play that type of style. You just have to live with the kind of mental mistakes that come from it.
That makes a lot of sense.
And as our listeners know, I have a very good friend who knows all about gambling. You typically lose, so.
Right.
So, Adam, I had one more question for you myself. And I was wondering, with your coaching experience and whatnot, if you were in Watson's position, what would you do differently with regards to either from a defensive side or offensive side? Take your pick. With the personnel that they have on the court, how would you kind of deploy them to get maximum efficiency, as you were talking about earlier?
I think offensively, the biggest key for me would be creating more movement off the ball, and that's centered around Devin Booker. Using him when the ball's in Bledsoe's hand as a guy who's coming off screens on the opposite side of the floor, so that, again, you get either Bledsoe attacking the rim, you get Booker open off of more screening actions, or those screeners slipping to the rim when everyone's paying attention to Booker and getting easy opportunities near the rim. I think that there's no shortage of good playmakers on this Suns team, right? Bledsoe, Ulis, Booker, and I know everybody rolled their eyes right now, but Brandon Knight, he can't.
I appreciate
plays.
That you didn't mention him earlier, but go on.
Yeah, I mean he's the king of the you know foot on the line.
Oh my god!
That's his thing. That's his thing.
But, you teach him how to shoot a 24-foot 3-pointer.
So I think he's capable. I don't know how much longer he'll be in a Suns uniform, but. He's certainly capable of making plays when he gets into that right mode. But I'd just like to see a little bit more movement off the ball on offense.
Okay. All right. And I think most people out here in Phoenix would agree with that. And what I've gathered from all of this is we just got to calm down and just let this work itself out because
ride the wave.
We've got a bunch of young dudes on this team. We're going to have another high draft pick coming up this year. Who would you take, Adam? Any thoughts right off the top of your head? Who you take if you were the Suns this draft?
Yeah.
Let's say they're top three.
For the Suns, my top three? Well, if you get the first pick and you can get Markelle Fultz, I don't think you pass on him. I think he's really, really good.
Yeah. Seriously, we are best friends, I think.
Okay, good. Next guy would be Jason Tatum for Duke. I think he's just that kind of go-to guy when you need a bucket. I see him being that guy. And he kind of fills a positional need on the wing there. After that, I think the next best pick is probably Lonzo Ball, and then you start shopping Bledsoe.
Yeah, and I had mentioned a few weeks back, we were talking about the draft coming up, and Paul had mentioned how it's a very point guard heavy draft.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I don't want to alienate the Suns' best player, but then I thought about it more, and there are two players that I would alienate the Suns' best player for, one being Markelle Fultz, the other one being Lonzo Ball. So, but at any rate, with that being said, thank you again very much, Adam, for coming on our pod here with us this week.
Yeah, much appreciated.
Much appreciated.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
Would love to have you back. And again, everybody out there, you can catch Adam on Twitter at Spinella14. And that's correct, right? I didn't write this.
That's correct.
Awesome.
He pronounced it correct too?
He did. He's good at this. We're best friends.
See? Seriously, Paul, you're
I'm
fired.
Out.
You are fired.
You're out.
I love you, bro, but you're fired. And make
I'm
sure
taking that Godson thing back.
Make sure to check out bballbreakdown.com where Adam is a contributor, and also check out the other sites that he contributes at, including Men's Basketball Hoop Scoop, The Box in One, and Fast Model Sports. And as always, you can catch me on Twitter at So Says Jay and Paul.
At Dervish of World.
And Adam, if your team ever comes down for some, I don't know, some basketball tournament or something down to Arizona, bro, you got a place to stay.
I appreciate that, guys.
Not the whole team, though. I don't know if they fit.
not the whole team. No,
well, maybe. You know, we
I
might,
assume
I might
you're going to offer up my house.
Yeah, your house is bigger, so maybe. So, but anyway, Adam, again, really appreciate it. Is there anything you want to say? Anything you want to plug? Anything you want to throw out there, bud?
No, just hey, Suns fans, keep being patient. They're moving in the right direction, and I know it's hard to stay patient, but there's a lot of good pieces in place.
Awesome, totally agree with you. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for listening as always, and until next time. Depending on when you're listening, have a good morning, good afternoon, or good night.
Leave. That's all, folks.
That's my favorite one yet, Paul. Good job. Take care, everyone.